A few years ago, we grew and sold a business that forever changed our lives. At first, we really struggled trying to figure out which tools to use to help run and organize our community. But that all changed once we discovered Kajabi. Kajabi is the ultimate all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. No matter your niche, Kajabi makes it easy to turn your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, thriving communities, personalized coaching, and more. The best part, Kajabi doesn't take a cut of your revenue because everything is owned and controlled by you, so you keep 100% of what you earn. And with Kajabi, you also get robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates all built in. You don't need a huge audience to make sustainable income. There are thousands of creators on Kajabi making six and seven figures with less than 50,000 followers. Right now, Kajabi is offering a free 30-day trial to start your business if you go to kajabi.com/MU. That's kajabi.com/MU. Go to kajabi.com/MU and join the creators and entrepreneurs who have made over $7 billion. More and more entrepreneurs and investors are discovering the awesome franchise opportunities that exist across a variety of industries. Franchising can simply be the better path, and interest in franchising is at an all-time high. Lucky for you, John Austinson, founder of FranBridge Consulting and a past Millionaire University guest, is here to help you explore the premier franchise opportunities today. John and his FranBridge consulting team are part of the largest franchise brokerage in the U.S. and have vetted the market thoroughly. FranBridge is hands down the premier source for the best opportunities in the franchise world, including both active and passive opportunities. From tiny homes to youth soccer to industrial hoses to pets, senior care to mental health, and more. John has served as an Inc. 500 franchisor and is a multi-brand franchisee himself. And he does more placements than anyone else in the country. Sign up for a free consultation call with John today or get a free copy of his book, Non-Food Franchising, at FranBridgeConsulting.com. That's FranBridgeConsulting.com. Available in the U.S. and Canada.
So it's not that the homeowner gets all of the equity since you brought in 80% of the capital, they brought in 20%, depending on how you look at it. It's more of a shared home ownership model. And that's really the niche that I'm trying to solve.
Hey, hey, MU Nation. Welcome to the Millionaire University Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Guerin, back with you today. And I am very excited to welcome our guest, Adam Zock of Home Equity Partner, joining us on the pod today. Adam owns Home Equity Partner. It's a real estate business that essentially plays matchmaker between home buyers who might not qualify for a regular traditional home loan. He connects them with real estate investors and hooks them up with a rent-to-own situation. So he has a really cool business, but he has an even cooler story of starting from a regular W-2 and getting that entrepreneurial bug and starting a business, finding a business partner. Adam has a lot of cool, actionable advice for us today, so I can't wait to jump in. So without further ado, let's welcome Adam Zock to the podcast. Here we go.
I'll start off just growing up in a town of about 15,000 people in North Dakota. So not being a whole lot of people, I was one of six. And so the entire state of North Dakota where I live in is probably about one circle square mile of what most people are doing. And so having to get very creative on doing stuff long distance. So transitioning all the way to what I'm doing now, which is all long distance real estate investing and just playing a matchmaker between two different people, I feel like I uniquely set on, okay, what are my advantages and what are my disadvantages in life? And so it's like, oh, I maybe don't have a million people in my city or in my area. So it's like, oh, what do I have? And it's like, oh, I know real estate. I know that if I invest here locally, that real estate's going to do very predictable returns. But if I want to do something bigger, I might have to broadcast out. And so anyone that feels like they maybe don't have the skill sets or different things, maybe try to leverage that to your advantage, invest in something that's not going to appreciate super high, but essentially went through the engineering school, was doing the delayed gratification of go to college, get the good job, but then the delayed gratification didn't pay off when they told me to wait 40 years. And so then my foot started tapping underneath the table. And I was like, I got to do something. Even if I can retire 10 years earlier. That would be it for me. And I was like, okay, well, I can just stuff money into the stock market. I could start my own business. I can do fantasy sports betting and hope I can win on that, which is a lot of fun, but turns out doesn't pay off a lot. I could spend a lot of time doing it, but it didn't pay off. Then I found this little thing called real estate. And selfishly, it was just, I wanted $6,000 a month to replace my income or to get close to my engineering salary, about 60% of my salary. And if I felt like I could do that as a side hustle, that was good enough for me to leave the engineering world. So luckily, I then left a couple years ago, my wife did, and now all I do is turning the real estate investment side into a full business, because at first I was just solving my own pain, which is admittedly selfish, but it's probably the biggest motivator. I know there's a lot of people like altruistic and want to have a social impact, which is fantastic. But unless you are extremely motivated by that thing, I'm a flawed human being. And so for me, it was like, I wanted X amount of money coming in every month, because then I knew I could have Adam's time back. And once I got my time back, I could then go and do different things. I constantly give, I'm trying to do my time, but I got a 6, 4, and 1 year old. And so my time is the most valuable resource. So I was doing return on investments along with return on time invested. So if I'm making $50 an hour as an engineer, you better believe that anything underneath a $20 an hour task was getting delegated as soon as possible. And so that was one superpower that I had, was a great paying job, but no time. I had family, I had engineering. So it's like, how quickly can I get people with me? How quickly can I outsource? How do I automate to start doing this? But then I also just failed super fast buying 4 properties that to this day probably aren't going to make me a whole lot of money. But I just jumped into the game of doing this to now where we have this specific niche of finding people who can't get a bank loan and pairing them up with people like doctors, lawyers, attorneys, or people that have a W-2 job that can get bank loans all day, every day. And then they're just kind of playing the bank where they're giving their own pre-approval and almost like co-signing on a loan for people. It just happens to be a rent-to-own arrangement. And now that's how we're facilitating the transactions now, is just helping real estate investors get double-digit returns back by real estate while they're helping someone get into a home who couldn't secure a traditional mortgage.
Very cool. At least to me, when I first chatted with you, that was a bit of a foreign concept, because as a homeowner and a first-time home buyer, it was one of those scenarios where you're kind of beholden to A, your assets, and B, what the bank would loan you. But in your case, what your business does is it provides essentially those who might have trouble acquiring a home loan for whatever reasons. I mean, I know being self-employed, sometimes that can be a difficulty.
That's
just
right.
In terms of how much money you report versus how much the bank wants to give you, that solves that problem.
You got it. So yeah, there's just 5 things. It's your down payment, it's your credit score, it's your debt to income ratio, which kind of plays into that thing. It's your job history. They want 2 years of like taxes or bankable information. I went and got my registered mortgage loan originator so that I could understand this a lot better to be able to help people. And then 5 is just a background check, making sure they don't have bankruptcies or evictions and different things. And so the key thing is like, oh, if you have all 5, great, you can get a bank loan. That's probably your best option. But if you have 4 out of the 5, you're basically just a pass fail. And so what I've done is be like, you know what? If someone's going to give me 10, 15, or 20% down on a house, I'm willing to take that bet as an investor for someone like Brian who's self-employed or for someone else. And so that's where I was just like, as long as I could be like the bank where I'm just making a yield spread on the capital that I'm lending. If I'm borrowing from the same bank at 7%, but then charging it at 9%, you just make a 2% yield spread on, you know, basically no money out. If depending on how much capital that they're bringing to the table, you know, different people can bring 10, 15, or 20%. So you're just kind of co-signing on their loan. And that's what we really figured out, is it's just a calculated risk to reward. And hey, if it goes bad, okay, I have their 10, 15, or 20% down. And if I can't, and if it does go well, they just eventually secure a mortgage in the next 1 to 3 years, or they sell the home or whatever they want to do. But then that way I'm protected. And that's kind of how the banks look at it. They just have their very set criteria because they're doing trillions of dollars. So the loan officers have to be doing this. But that's really where I stole the idea. It's like, oh, we are putting trillions of dollars into mortgage-backed securities. They just bundle them all up. If you've seen The Big Short, right? You got the class A's and then you got the garbage and the junk bonds, but you're really only getting whatever the interest rate was. So whatever it is 4 years ago, it was like 2%. Now it's maybe 6%. And so it's like, I really don't want that as an investment. Me personally, like, yes, big pension funds, they have to have this low risk and they have to put money, trillions of dollars into mortgage-backed securities that are just earning them 5% where it's considered safe, but it's not very liquid. If you're just personally loaning someone, say if I loaned you $1 million at 5% over 30 years, that's not a great investment, right? It's not liquid. It's in the asset. I have a mortgage that I could potentially sell off or trade, but it's not very sexy. And so I was like, well, how do the banks do it? It's like, well, the banks just actually borrow the money from the Fed and then lend it out themselves. And not only that, but they do it at some sort of multiple. So they're not even using their own money. They're just borrowing someone else's, lending it out at a different spread, providing some sort of service. So I was like, oh, why don't we just do that with private money? So it's similar to like kind of peer-to-peer personal loans. We just happen to do it with a secured asset with real estate that tends to appreciate over time.
Right, right. And you make your money off the slightly higher interest rate that you charge the borrower. So it's just like how the banks borrow from the Fed at the 5.25, whatever it is, and then they charge us 7 or 8 or 9, wherever it is these days. And that's how they make their markup. It's the same concept.
Yep, you got it. And then in addition to that, no one likes fees and no one likes different things. But there's like when you originate the loan or you buy the piece of property, maybe there's some initial fees or costs that you do it. And then in a specific rent to own agreement, we're actually adding on, call it 4% per year onto their buyback price. And so you get a little bit cash up front, you get the spread going out. And then when they buy back the home, it's almost like a shared equity model. So it's not that the homeowner gets all of the equity since you brought in 80% of the capital, they brought in 20%, depending on how you look at it. It's more of a shared home ownership model. And that's really the niche that I'm trying to solve. It's like people can rent or they can get a mortgage. You either own 0% or you own 100% on title with a secured loan. And I was like, what would it look like if there was actually fractional ownership inside it? And so rent to own is just one creative way. You can do it with like a land contract or a joint venture, have multiple people on title. And so there's just various different ways. And so our goal is to kind of break that system and create this new, if it's not black, if it's not white, if we're in this gray area, just kind of creative financing area that I feel like if you don't fit one of the two sides, we're just going to own that market.
This is super creative. It really piqued my interest because I had never heard of it before I met you. So I want to take a few steps back. So you were starting out an engineer, right?
Yep.
And engineers make pretty good income, right? But you really wanted to accelerate, like you said, if you could retire just 10 years earlier. Did you jump into real estate with the idea for a home equity partner, or did that come to you as you started buying your first property?
Yeah. And I say good income because it's relative. I started off at $50,000 a year in 2011, which is fairly good income for a 21-year-old. There's still more money than I had ever made before coming out of college and earning nothing. Mm-hmm. So maybe in the larger cities, there's different. So like I didn't have a ton of money, but I had the W-2 and I could make some money and I was saving some every single month. But it was roughly 3 or 4 years into that. And I was like, you know what? As hard as I work within business, I can maybe earn another 3 to 4%. But there's no like 100% ROI or there's nothing like 30%. And I was like, man, I really wanted to do something. So that's when I started to get into real estate. I had house hacked my first property where I bought a house, rented out the rooms to my three buddies. So they were essentially paying my mortgage. So I got a little bit of exposure that way. If you're a college student or something like that, having your mom or dad buy your property while you're living in college and having three friends rent out the house and then they own it for 4 years is a fantastic strategy if you can get on uncle, family member, or someone to do it, because you have to rent it anyways. You might as well have your roommates pick out a house, have your folks or family member co-sign or buy the house for you. And then after 4 or 5 years, when you graduate, keep it yourself as a rental, stay in it yourself. And that's just a great segue. That's what I'm doing with my kids. They got 10 to 15 years that, you know, that it will go before that. But what a great kind of wealth hack to be able to leverage that. And even if you don't have family members that can do it, individual real estate investors would be more than happy. If you go pick out a $250,000 house, tell them that you're going to take care of it, pay maybe $2,200 or $2,500 a month in rent, and everybody throws in $400 and it's a 4 or 5 bedroom, it works out pretty well. And so that was kind of one hack that I was like, got a little bit of exposure to the real estate. But then it was like, okay, well, I just need to get my next investment property. And it cost me like 40 grand for the down payment to buy an investment property. It was a $200,000 house, putting roughly 15% down with another 5 grand in closing costs. And I was like, man, that kind of taps my capital out. But it was just, my goal was 2 properties a year for 10 years. That's all I needed to do, was like, if I can get that, then within 20 years, the amortization, the loan pay down, after that, I can then start selling homes. And that will be like the big liquidation event. So it's just 2 homes. I was like, okay, great. I got to save this up. But I was like, man, this is kind of tough to save up 40 or 50K twice a year. And so then that's when I found a business partner who's like, you like real estate, I like real estate. Let's combine time, let's combine capital and experience. And then that's where we really started to buy more properties faster. And then through that, you learn a lot quicker of like, oh, like we run out of capital, so maybe we don't want to do turnkeys, or hey, can we do some forced equity? Can we have college students go pick out a house and we'll buy that home? So it's a turnkey. And then eventually it landed on this rent to own model where it was like, I want the least amount cash down that I possibly can while leveraging the fact that I got an 800 credit score and I can go get a bank loan at a 4% interest rate. I had a friend that was like, hey, if I gave you a 6% interest rate, you came in with a 20% down, I got a loan for 4% and I just made $200 or $300 a month. Does that work for you? He's like, sure. You're telling me I can get a house? And we did some sort of shared appreciation model. But like for me, it was literally zero money down at an 80% loan to value that I was getting $200 or $300 a month, to which I was hoping for $200 or $300 a month by putting 50K into the deal. So that was kind of like version 3.0, which was just start getting into rentals, screw up, do a few different things that didn't quite work. And then we got into this rent to own or creative financing, which was like, I really want to preserve my cash because I had deployed a couple $100,000 into real estate. And now I'm just like, okay, well, I really only want to put in 5% or 10%, but how can I do that? So then we started doing that with only 5 or 10%. And then once we did that enough to basically quit, now I started teaching my engineering buddies how to do the exact same thing. So now I find the people that can't get the bank loan. And then I present them to my fellow engineers, investors, real estate investors who are like, man, I would really like a turnkey cash flowing property that I don't have to bring 20 or 25% to that actually cash flows. And that's now the new value proposition. So now it's like I turn a real estate investing personal venture into now a full-fledged business where now we're only buying, you know, maybe one or two properties ourselves a year. The majority of them is we're helping connect and kind of matchmake these two parties.
Okay, right. So now you have a stable of real estate investors that you can connect to the folks who fit in that bubble of they want a home, need a home, but don't necessarily qualify for the bank loan or for whatever reason, they're not getting the favorable terms. Now you have a stable of investors that you can connect them to.
Yeah. And what's really fun is in my mind, I imagine this March Madness style bracket. We just came off of March Madness, but it's like on one side, you'd have everyone who can't get a bank loan or maybe doesn't want a bank loan, or maybe they want to test drive a house before they buy it. And it just happens to be a rent to own. So you have maybe 1,000 people over here, and then you have 100 investors. And the investors are like, these are the states or the cities I want to invest in. Here's my expected return. Here's my risk. And so essentially, we're creating this algorithm where we're just, they input, here's the house I want, the beds, the baths, the city, how much I'm willing to pay for rent. And then we screen them. We kind of get a risk profile. So now we just have all these profiles, and then they basically hit enter, and it kind of does this almost like, although I've never used it, people have equated it to like Tinder, right? Where you're like swiping left or swiping right on whether or not you want to buy this person a home or whether or not you want this investor to buy you a home. And so that's what we're doing and slowly launching is just this matchmaker effect kind of on the private money on the real estate side.
Wow. Okay. So like an actual piece of software?
Yeah, so we have a couple different things that we're working on. So one, we have just the true business where I feel like I'm playing telephone operator, where it's just like, hey, Brian, do you want this deal? Okay, pick up the phone. I'm like, all right, Jack, Brian wants this deal. And we're using emails and some smarter ways of like automating spreadsheets. But now we've gotten some grant funding to actually do what we did on a small business side and basically SaaSify it. So now the idea is we're going to use technology. Everyone's going to input what they want, and it's going to automate things so that even though that there needs to be some sort of authority or content, but it's like, we've now done this almost 100 times. I pretty much know every question that the investor and the tenant's going to want. And I've seen deals go great and I've seen deals go south. And so the idea is that we're going to use all of our knowledge, build this into our tech stack. And now instead of Adam playing a finder's fee and charging like what a real estate agent would do, like 3% or 4% for basically playing connector, because that's what a real estate agent would charge. Now it's just like people sign up and they can pay $50 a month. And so instead of Adam making 10 grand per transaction, I just want 100 users on each side paying $50 a month and turn that into a software business that just happens to then amplify our existing business. So it's kind of like slowly going up the business food chain on just different evolutions of the same product. But it all started with Adam just buying his own house, then trying to buy the next investment properties. Then it was like, oh, now I want to get more for my dollar. Then I started playing matchmaker where I actually turned it from a real estate investment to a business. And now it's just kind of a different evolution of the business that we're working on.
That's really cool. I could keep going for hours on questions on this because I'm fascinated, but you hit on a point a few minutes ago that I want to get back to. You said that what really took your business to the next level was finding a partner. Can you tell us a little bit about how you ended up finding your partner? Was he a friend of yours or was it just kind of by happenstance? And what really was it in your mind that, hey, partnering up is really going to do something for me?
I feel like business partnerships either go really bad or really well.
Right.
I know very few that are like, you know what, I'm okay with this. And so what really hit home for me is my father, who's been in business with his partners for 40 plus years, are exiting. And I don't know all the specifics, but it's not like a great mutual, like, hey, this was awesome. It's like, hey, there's lawyers or attorneys. And I asked him a pretty profound question. I said, hey, knowing everything that you know right now, would you do it all over again? And without hesitation, he said yes. And so it's like, even though a business partnership can fail, so I don't treat it the same way as my marriage, where my marriage is forever and there's no like, hey, if it went, like that's a little bit different, but I draw some kind of parallels where date your business partner, get engaged with your business partner before you get business married with your business partner, like from an LLC perspective. And so what we did is we just started doing a few deals together, but I am so far into camp business partnership that it's not even funny. So I'm going to be the person who's had failed partnerships, but also great partnerships. And they by far, the good ones outweigh the bad ones, because the bad ones are like, yeah, that sucked. I didn't like it. I lost money. I had to go to court. You had to do this. The product didn't quite fit. But for the ones that do, it is so hard to do this by yourself. And people that have done it, it's great, but it's, I remember the quote, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And just having someone else, because I try to talk to my wife all the time about real estate, and she's like, yeah, I'll give you kind of like the glossed over eyes, right? But I'm super passionate about it. And you can join masterminds, you can have other things, but having an actual equity invested partner where you're like, he finds stuff that I miss, or I miss stuff and then he finds it, and you know, vice versa. But then you also figure out that, hey, Adam's really good at sales and marketing and I'm an extrovert, and my business partner is an introvert and likes numbers and operations and contracts. And I'm like, you're telling me that you like that stuff? And he's like, yep. I'm like, oh, thank goodness. And so it was a little bit of a happy accident. But then since then, I've strategically formalized that. I do a lot of like personality style tests. I do like the DISC profile, the Enneagram, do the strength-based finders. And so you want similar vision, complementary skill sets. You don't want two salespeople, at least from my experience. I want someone who's awesome at sales and someone who's awesome at client fulfillment or operations and finance. Because that guy, the operations and fulfillment, doesn't want to do a sales call and cannot get rejected on a phone call all day, every day. It completely drains him. Patrick Lencioni did a book on this, like the Six Working Geniuses, where it was just about, you like ideas, you start up, and then someone else is like, I don't like coming up with ideas, but I'm okay just like executing if someone else comes up with it. I'm like, I love coming up with ideas. I can come up with 1,000 ideas every single week. And so I just need people to like formalize it and then go and act on them. And so then that really works out. So for me, that, for home equity partner, me and my business partner that are 50-50, there's been times where I wanted to yell at them. There's times I probably wanted to get the equivalent of business divorce. And then it's like, oh, you know what's awesome? Is like my business partner just answered 30 emails while I was on this. And some people teach you like, oh, you can train a VA to do it. You can train an employee. And if you can, that's great. Adam didn't learn how to do that. I just found someone who was a friend that happened to be in construction that wanted to get into real estate. We did one property together. Turns out he was handy. Turns out I was not. Turns out he has connections that I don't. And then since then, we've just been going side by side, and it's turned into this wonderful business that's provided the lifestyle that when Adam goes on vacation for a week, or my business partner John goes on vacation for a week, it's like, man, I'm really not needed. Like if I stop pedaling, eventually I would come to a stop, but you have someone that is financially and equitably interested, not an employee, and they take it very seriously. So I maybe went on a little bit of a rant there, but that's Adam's belief on the business partnerships. I think everyone should find one.
Shopify has already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MU, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MU to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MU.
Want to know a secret? There's more to becoming a millionaire than making money. We talk a lot about building businesses and taking the road less traveled to achieve your goals. But the most successful entrepreneurs we know will tell you investing and growing your money is an essential component to creating wealth, which is why we're really excited about today's sponsor for this episode, Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. It's never too late to start growing, and it's never too early either. You've heard us say about a million times on this podcast that it takes small, consistent steps to build big results. And we love Acorns and how accessible it is to people at all levels of investment knowledge. So head to acorns.com/MU or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today.
Paid non-client endorsement may not be representative of all clients. Tier 1 compensation provided. Compensation provides an incentive to positively promote Acorns. View important disclosures at acorns.com/MU. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Please consider your objectives, risk tolerance, and Acorns fees before investing. Acorns Advisors LLC. Acorns is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are provided to clients of Acorns by Acorns Securities LLC. Member FINRA/SIPC. For more information, visit acorns.com.
That's great. And I wanted you to go on a rant on that because business partnerships is one of those, not taboo, that's not the right word, but it can be for some because when you start your company, you start your business, it's just you.
Yeah.
Unless you start it with a partner, you know, you walk before you run and have someone who's working towards being a partner, but it can be scary. And I've seen both sides of the coin from having partners and having 100% ownership, where having partners, if they're the right partners, is amazing, especially when you have those complementary skill sets that you mentioned. Because I think you're right. If it's just a two-person partnership, if you're both good at the exact same things, that's going to be tough because that's going to lead to a lot of headbutting. It's going to lead to stepping on toes or someone getting mad, right? Not that you won't get mad in a complementary relationship, but having a visionary and an implementer is an incredible place to be in a business partnership for the reasons that you stated. So that's really cool. That's a big thing where if you're fortunate enough to find someone, then go for it, right? Walk before you run. Like you said, don't get business married right away, but always be open to those ideas, I think, is a great thing.
One thing I would add is I think ego kills most businesses. There could be the true, like, I'm carrying this thing and this doesn't make any sense. Like my business partner got sick or, you know, something else happened and like, you're truly like carrying it. But there's a lot of times where I'm just like, well, I'm doing this. Like, what is he doing? Or, you know, but it's like similar to my marriage, similar to my business partnership. I want them to get the better end of the deal. And if I can say that with honesty, that I feel like, hey, my wife and my business partner are getting the better end of this deal and that I'm giving more than I'm receiving, you know, lifting different people up, that kind of helps sequester some of Adam's ego, right? Because if I feel like I'm giving more value, I'm like, oh, I should own more percent or I should get a higher caliber. But it turns out that it's very difficult to measure in that sense. And it just, if you act with that attitude, it's one of our core values just from generosity, which is see a need, fill a need, give more than you receive. If you're doing that, it equally fills yourself up and then it happens to bless you in very great ways. That's my own personal challenge, is just like the ego of, oh, I should have 51% instead of 49%, or I'm doing this, he's doing that, or he's gone for a couple of days. It's crazy how much it changes day to day, week to week, and year to year.
You mentioned percentages. You don't have to share what yours is if you don't want to, but how does that work when you're entering a business partnership, a business relationship? How do you decide on that percentage? There's probably a ton of factors. This might be a really open-ended question, but how did you guys decide on how that was going to factor into how the relationship would be officially solidified?
Sure. So we started off with a one-page operating agreement, which was simply just like, it's 50-50. Here's what we're going to do. This is the ultimate goal that we want. And we had no idea how we were going to do it. It was essentially, the goal was to get to each of us to $10,000 a month. We're going to do it through real estate. If one of us died, this is what happened. There was no way of like valuing the business. There was no like the now 20-page legal document of probably the right way of doing things, which I would recommend starting that route. But I still like the idea of just a one page of like, what are our expectations and who's doing what? How much time are you committing? How much capital are you committing? And what's your skill set that you're committing? Are usually the three values that you're bringing into it. And that's like, so literally time, number of hours, literal capital, dollars. But then like, do you have a unique skill set, resources, or network that makes you a higher dollar per hour leverage? Like if I wanted to partner with Alex Hormozi, I could put in all the time and I could put in all the capital, but with one tweet, he could do more work than I could in 10 years combined. But it's not any effort, not much, any time, but if he promoted something, right? So it's tough to value that last one, which is almost just a skill set or a resource ability. But those are the three big things that I see bringing into it. I've done it that way where it's just true 50-50 to start with, or I've done some sort of like vested equity where it's like, hey, like in general, you're a 50-50 partner, but from 0 to 1 year, it's nothing. And then it basically vests 20% every year so that eventually they have some sort of ownership, because it's all exciting at the very beginning. You're both starting to do this. And until you're actually making money, in my opinion, like it pretty much doesn't matter unless you're contributing capital, like a lot of capital. But for most businesses, I don't think you should spend more than $5,000 to start the business anyways. You get your secretary of state, you maybe start a website. And then unless you're making money, like that doesn't have to be too formalized. It's really once you start making money, or if for some reason you made some really bad investments and now you're in debt of who owes the debt back to it, is where things, you know, start to shake off. And so I'm kind of the opinion that it's just progress, 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 have a loose one page agreement. And if things are like, all right, turns out this is a real business, and I think that there's some value here. It's like, all right, who's going to be doing what? What are the roles? Because at first, you're just trying to be one of the 10 that actually succeed in a small business or a startup. And I don't want people to get bogged down of like, what should be my tax structure? And just do an LLC, do a multi-member, manage LLC, or just create the LLC yourself, figure the rest out later.
Start small and grow from there. Because obviously the majority of small businesses fail, right? For a multitude of reasons. So I think it's really easy to get caught up in, like you said, how do I tax classify myself? What percentages do we do? No, just get started. That one pager. I love that advice. Get that one pager operating agreement. Get the goals of what each of you want from this. And then don't worry about it until you start making money. And then once you start making money, start seeing how much it is, and then get a little bit more formal as you go along.
Yeah. And I think that's the big difference between a startup and a small business. And I think you have to decide which one you are. To me, a startup is like, hey, we're doing this. We're bootstrapping. We're not paying ourselves. And the goal is eventually we're going to raise money, get a big exit, or like, hey, this is going to really blow up. Versus what I started, which was I thought was a startup, but it turns out it's just a small business, which was I just want to be profitable. Those are two very different ideas. One's like, I'm going to change the world and it's innovation or a new product or making a better mousetrap. Nothing wrong with any of those innovation styles. Or there's just, you know what I really want to do is start my own contracting business or my own landscaping, my own real estate business. And all I want it to do is profitable so that I've moved from an employee to a business owner. It still requires a ton of my time, but I just have a little bit more control. And knowing if you're a startup or a small business, at least for how I classify it, sometimes is a huge weight too on how you're paying yourselves and your approach to risk and reward.
Oh, that's fantastic. I haven't really heard it said that way. That's so true though. You're right. As a startup, like there's just a different mindset with it. Whereas as a small business owner, profitability is the goal. Like get to profitability and that makes you the small business owner. I think that's wonderful.
And if you haven't looked at it, North Dakota is super favorable with like grants. We literally got $10,000 to start and progress this idea just by applying and figuring out what resources that we have. There are so many state resources, SBA, SBDC, that are like, even if you're between $0 or even up to like $1 million in revenue, there's retired people through SCORE, that's just a national network that'll just give you advice for free or connect you with people for free. And I was like, sometimes I'm like so prideful. I'm like, oh, I got to join this paid mastermind group or do all this stuff. And it turns out that the federal government, as inefficient as they may or may not be, has all of these free resources for you to go through that people are just like willing to connect you with it. And so if you're listening to this, you're like, oh, like in addition to the Millionaire University podcast, because this is going to give you like probably the freshest and the most unique takes, I still think that there's an equal part of just basic business that you can get from the SBA or from SCORE, from these free resources locally through your city or through your state program. So I've gotten very good loans and very awesome grants by just opening the door, because states want to see your business succeed because they get revenue from it. So it's like a lot of them have incentives. So I would check those out.
That's a hot tip for sure. I like that. And you said grants too. That's something I didn't even think about, the grants for your business.
Didn't know they existed until I ran into somebody in the Chamber of Commerce who did like the Economic Development Committee chair. And he's like, yeah, my goal is to bring revenue from outside the state to the inside the state. So if you have any revenue model that brings, call it investor capital or users from outside the state, which is what we're doing, he's like, yeah, you can apply for these programs and you can literally get non-payable, non-dilutive programs. And then there's all these different accelerator programs for startups and small businesses like Techstars, if you could get into Y Combinator, but there's some more local, just like free ones like GBeta that are worth going into too. That's just free, just takes your time, but man, there's so much value in them.
I love that. Yeah. Hit up your state, folks, or the feds. They might give you some advice or the free stuff, like eat it all up before you get to the paid. I like that. So Adam, you mentioned a little bit earlier, matchmaking. That is the crux of your business right now. Applying this universally to businesses of all kinds, right? Like that's kind of the backbone of everything you do in a business, right? You have a problem. I have a solution. I tell you about the solution. Let's dance, right? So when you got to that kind of matchmaking idea, was that something that just kind of occurred to you? Or how did that really start being the basis for what you do now?
Once I figured out that the banks are playing matchmaker through debits and credits, that like Amazon is a marketplace, Facebook is a marketplace between advertisers and users. And like I all of a sudden started to realize how people are essentially matchmaking individuals together. And all they're doing is making it easy or removing friction. And then for that, they're taking value. So like they're just making it easy for people. So if you see a pain that someone's trying to do and you're like, ooh, I could solve that problem. I could see A, first solving the problem yourself. Can you have that skill set? But then part two to that is how do I remove myself from the equation? And so that's kind of been the two-pronged approach of like, okay, I see a need, fill a need. Is there enough value that one person's willing to pay for it? So I got to solve it myself. And that's like the bootstrap, roll up your sleeves and just solve it. But then my next question is, how quickly can I remove myself from the situation? And a lot of that is technology, automation, different things. So for us, it happened to be we're finding tenants and they're like, you know what I'd really like is to be able to get into a home, but I can't because I have a mortgage and I'm tired of throwing money away on rent. And I was like, cool, I'll solve that problem for you personally. But now I was like, well, what would it look like if I know a bunch of people who want to get into real estate, but they have no idea where to start, right? They're like, I don't want to deal with tenants. I don't want to deal with toilets. I don't want to deal with turnover. And so I'm like, oh, okay, great. Like I didn't realize that getting into real estate is just as hard as someone trying to get into a house. And so it's like, okay, well, how do you remove that friction from the two pieces where you're either their trusted resource or you make it so simple? Because I feel like it was Teddy Roosevelt. He said, I would have written you a shorter letter if I had more time, which I feel like is so true because you can try to explain something in a 1-hour webinar or whatnot like this, but like, how do you articulate something that captures people's attention that's clear and concise? And ChatGPT is doing a fantastic way of helping me, my own personal business of just like, here's what I want to say it simpler, right? Or say it to like a fifth grade level, because I feel like sometimes people just need to know and have their number one, number two, and number three objections answered in a very simple, concrete, almost like guaranteed way versus having an extended, very long conversation about it, to which they might need later down the road. But just to get them interested in it, I feel like a lot of it is just like, oh, did you know that this exists? Hey, here's the 3-part, no longer than 30-second answer, to which they say, ooh, I'm still interested.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to put it, because simplifying, especially a process like real estate, whether it's someone who comes to you seeking real estate or investors, like there's got to be a process that has to be easily understandable for someone who is not involved in that on a regular basis. I remember doing that when we went through our first home buying process, right? It was a whole new thing for me. Now there's a lot of things I know now that I didn't know then. I wish I knew it, but if you have that, it's almost like a superpower, right? To be able to break it down in terms that are so simple that a 5-year-old could do. I use that all the time on myself because I'm like, you said that that's great. Now give it to me like I'm 5. Okay, now I can better understand it. And I think basing that with matchmaking, that's how you do it, because you make it simple for the original party and you connect them, you make that match with the ones who can solve that problem.
And I would offer a very realistic offer, which is, so if I was taking the same example and applying it to Home Equity Partner, I would say, hey, listener, if you reach out to every mortgage loan officer that you know and every real estate agent that you know, and you ask them, hey, do you have any clients that can't get approved for a loan? And if you answer that and they say, yes, awesome, I know this person, Adam, and then negotiate with Adam, be like, hey, if I send you some people, would you give me $1,000 if they buy a home for you? To which Adam would say yes. And it turns out you just became your own matchmaker, right? You listen to this podcast, you understood something. The agent or the loan officer doesn't know that Home Equity Partner exists. And you can turn this into your own little revenue model where it's like, well, Adam, if I gave you X amount of leads, you know, per month, just by sending out your own contact list, because you to send a text or an email with someone that you know is way more valuable than Adam trying to pay to find that person. So I would more gladly pay someone $1,000 for a good referral than Adam to pay Google $1,000 to try to find that person myself. And so that would be a very easy standing example where my job then would make it really easy for the audience to refer someone to me, right? I'd be like, hey, go, here's this little one-page flyer for your mortgage loan officer or your real estate agent. Give it to them. Here's a specific URL link. If they submit this, you'll get an email. And by the way, if you do this, I'll give you $1,000 if they close on a home. To which someone would be like, well, for an hour of my time, why wouldn't I just do X, Y, or Z, go through my contact list? Or everyone knows at least probably one agent or one loan officer and be like, hey, what do you think about this? And for that, that's now Adam's value proposition to those people who want to be a little bit of a matchmaker. And you could do this for any business, right? If someone needs to paint their house and you happen to know someone, a lot of times, like, good work is just an honest referral and you don't need any kickback from that. But there's a lot of times that if you're providing a high valuable source, there's nothing wrong with negotiating because that painter actively wants leads, right? And he can either do it through being a really good job, or if he just said, hey, if I gave you a house that you make $5,000 of payment on, would you give me $250 as affiliate or as a referral? To which any smart business person would say yes, because their cost to acquire the customer at $250 to make a profit margin of $2,000 on a 10-to-1 return on ad spend is going to say yes every time. And so that would be similar to us. I'm happy to pay $1,000 if I can make 10 grand on it. And if it takes you 1 hour, 1 day, or 1 week, I could care less because you're leveraging your own skill set.
So give me just a minute while I finish this note on making sure I reach out to my mortgage loan officer friends for Adam. All right, perfect. I love that. That's such a cool way to apply that because you are making matches, even if you don't even have an LLC. You're just connecting Adam with a mortgage loan officer, a real estate agent. I'm sure they have people they talk to on a daily basis who, hey, I'm sorry, we can't really get you qualified. But now that agent can be like, hey, I know a guy. Why don't you go talk to Adam?
And the benefit is for real estate agents, we'll actually use them as the real estate agent because our buying entity or our investor LLC will buy the home. So not only does the person referring them to us get $1,000, but the real estate agent actually writes the offer, gets their 3% commission anyways. The loan officer that couldn't close on the home, all of these people that are getting into homes, they need to get a mortgage within 1 to 3 years. So then if they refer them to us, they basically get to secure the refinance or the loan purchase 1 to 3 down the road. So I basically take all of their bad leads, either close on them with the real estate agent so they still get their commission, or two, give it back to the loan officer that referred them to us in the next 1 to 3 years so they can kind of boomerang their prospects back to them.
Okay. And there's the upside to the loan officer who connects with Adam.
You got it.
Okay. Well, I love that. That's a pretty sweet little affiliate offer to sprinkle in here.
You bet.
That's fantastic.
I feel like it's a unique space. And one of my missions too is legitimize rent to own. Because I feel like rent to own furniture and TV and different things, it's kind of like, it feels a little bit scammy. And so like we have a whole podcast dedicated to helping tenants not get into bad deals where like you're putting 10 grand down and you lose the house, or what to look out for on the taxes and insurance. And so it's just doing it in a legal, ethical way that makes sense for both parties. And if they're like, nope, that's too expensive, or no, I don't like to do it, great. But be extremely transparent on contract prices, terms, what they have control over, what they do and what they don't. And that's why we feel like it's a potential good win-win. And so I would just encourage the audience of any other matchmaking type system that they're thinking about doing, whether it's online, whether it's in person or something like that, it's hard to determine what the value is. And all of your customers are not equal. Perry Marshall wrote a famous book on the 80-20 sales and marketing, where he used the stadium analogy, where he's like, yeah, you can have someone who's watching TV, which is worth about $10 to them, right? Through advertising. Or you have someone who is literally paying for the suite that is paying $50,000. So same person wants to watch the game, but one person's willing to pay $5 and one person's willing to pay $50,000. And so through your marketing or through your sales, his goal was get as high up the funnel as you can and then create that really unique experience, but always have two or three different tiers. So just think about your customers on, is this a really low value, low ticket offer, or is it better to go for someone on the high ticket offer? And so for us, we're focused on the equivalent of the higher up on the pyramid or the high value, high person, because we don't want to do a ton of volume, or at least in the initial concept, when I'm playing telephone operator, it's like, I want to do high value, high cost type transaction versus a bunch of low volume to start with. I want to be more of a, not the Walmarts of the world to start off with. I want to be more of an attorney charging $500 an hour type equivalent.
I love it. That's fantastic. Well, Adam, I want to honor your time here. I know we're getting close to wrapping up. So to close it out here, you gave a ton of actionable advice already. But if you had one thing you wanted to relay to our listeners about whether it's finally getting started in your business or deciding what to do, what's that one bit of advice that you could provide?
If it was me and you don't already have a business partner or you're thinking about bringing on someone else, I would spend some serious time thinking with a pen and paper and be like, hey, who is the ideal person that if I found them would significantly help my business? And if that's giving part of your equity away, I would consider you to challenge that or think about it, because if you're 100% owner, it can be extremely stressful. So my one piece of advice would be really consider who would be an awesome value add. And it's interesting when I ask that, usually somebody in your head pops up, right? You're like, ooh, my cousin, my friend, my business partnership. And usually they're very busy individuals because they're already successful. And it's like, if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person. Because everyone who's looking for a job or looking to become a partner, at least in my perspective, typically isn't as employable as someone who's already in a C-suite or already making $100,000 a year. And so your goal then is to inspire them in such a way that be like, hey, could I get 2 hours of your time? And in exchange, a lot of times, if you just pique their entrepreneurial curiosity, you can take a lot of those W-2 style individuals and be like, hey, do you want to be part of a startup? To which they're just like, I love it. It's fun. I might have the upside. And it's crazy what exchange of value you can get from finding that type of a person. So I would encourage the listeners, if you're thinking about starting a business, or if you have a business and you're thinking about bringing someone on, is find someone who's super busy, super professional, maybe has a higher salary if they don't have a ton of time, like great, versus someone who's like, yeah, I got 2,000 hours free this year. What do you want me to do? Depending on what exactly you need, because that could be more of like an apprentice that could eventually team up to it. But depending on where you're at in your stage of business, you could either go for the apprentice where you're like, hey, just shadow me. I'm going to pay you almost nothing. You might get some equity versus, hey, I'm going to go snipe someone who is really curious in starting a side hustle.
That's brilliant. And just as you were saying that, there's a friend of mine that's been in my mind. He and I are always talking about getting into business. We haven't quite yet, but it's just one of those where it's like, feels like a match. It's just a matter of what and when, right? But we're both extremely busy individuals. So I love that, because that's so true, because a busy individual is probably going to have the interest. They're going to make the time if it's right for them, and piquing that entrepreneurial curiosity. Because I was thinking about myself, someone comes to me with an opportunity, right? I am always all ears. All the time. I don't say yes to everything, but I am always all ears. So I think that's such a great way, a bit of a mind shift too, because you might think, well, that guy's so busy, that girl's so busy, they're not going to have time, they're not going to be interested in this one. No. Still might be worth the ask, especially if they have complementary skill set.
You got it.
Awesome. Well, Adam, thank you so much, man. This has been a ton of fun. I want to make sure that if any of our listeners want to reach out to you, how can we do that? What's the best way?
Sure. You can go to homeequitypartner.com. You can learn all about what we're doing with the matchmaking for people who can't get a loan, for real estate investors. Otherwise, if you want to follow me on Facebook or in LinkedIn, feel free to search Adam Zach. It's spelled Z-A-C-H. Or if there's links in the show notes, just check to see what's going on. But I'm a little bit more old school, where I'm not a ton on social media. I'm more of like an email and phone call kind of person. So if you want to give me a call or a text, 701-404-9137.
All right. I love it. Very cool. Yeah. And don't forget about his little affiliate offer that he slid in there. I think that's awesome, Adam. I might have to do that myself. That'd be a fantastic opportunity to start learning how to be a matchmaker if you aren't already.
I would love to pay someone $1,000. It would make me super happy if I could.
All right. You heard it here first, folks. Adam wants to pay you $1,000. All you got to do is make a solid match.
You got it.
All right. Well, thank you, Adam. This has been a blast. I look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Thank you so much, Brian.
What a cool story that Adam was able to share with us. Starting as an engineer, a W-2 employee, and working his way into equaling his income, and then turning his side hustle into his full-time business, and now into an awesome real estate business that's even working on a SaaS product. He could very well go on to change the entire real estate game, and it was a pleasure having him on today. So thank you, Adam, for joining us. One of the big points that I took home from Adam was being a business matchmaker. I think that has so much to do across industries, across any type of business you may be involved in. Thinking of yourself as a matchmaker, someone who has a solution to others' problem, is a fantastic way to go about building your business and being able to exemplify helping others solve their problem and you getting paid to do so. All right, this is Professor Guerin signing off. I can't wait to have you guys back for another episode of the Millionaire University Podcast. Keep crushing it, people.
Hey, Eric Fisher here, and if you love the conversations and lessons happening on this show, and you've heard my voice before, you'll love my show, Beyond the To-Do List. It's a podcast about productivity and getting things done in all the areas where we wear multiple hats and roles, but also about the true meaning of productivity, living a more meaningful life. Look, you've got a never-ending to-do list, but add this podcast to your to-do list and it will help you tackle the rest. Go right now wherever you're listening to this and search Beyond the To-Do List and hit follow or subscribe. Start listening and get that boost for your productivity that you've been needing. Again, that's Beyond the To-Do List. Search in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this podcast.